So the Golden State Warriors missed the finals two back-to-back years, but they found their way back into it only 3 years later. I respect it. I respect it. Welcome on in, everyone, to 94 Feet. This is your host, B.O.D. here with you. I hope you guys are doing well on this wonderful Wednesday afternoon. Please forgive me. I know many of you are probably wondering where you've been. I haven't heard from you. NBA Finals are going on. I mean, what are your thoughts? What are your opinions? When are we going to, you know, get a chance to hear some more content? And I apologize, guys. It's been a wonderful month, but it's also been a busy month of May and April for me. I had two good friends of mine that recently got married. And just between duties of being a best man and being a groomsman in each of those, had me running around a little bit, but it was some good time spent, really enjoyed it. And I'm really happy to be back on here with you guys today. So as always, we're going to have some fun. For those of you guys that are new to the show, I definitely encourage you to subscribe. And like always, if you're going to have some fun, you might as well do it with another partner in crime. So I got my man, Josh Collins, on the line with me today. Josh, how you doing today, man?
What's going on, man? I appreciate you for bringing me back. I believe this is part two of me.
I think so. Yeah, this is like a little part two action. So I'm looking forward to it, man. You know, we're definitely going to have a good time. Just moving right ahead, man. We're going to just go ahead and get right into what's on my mind. All right. So I want to start off with the Western Conference Finals and the Eastern Conference Finals, which just finished up on Sunday. Question here for you. So would you say it's a better performance by the Warriors, starting with the Western Conference? Okay. We'll go to the Eastern Conference in a second. We're going better or worst. Is it a better performance by the Warriors or a worse performance by the Mavs?
I believe, honestly, it's a better performance by the Warriors. I mean, you just said it at the top of the show, you know, with them being out of it for the amount of time that they've been out. I don't really think that a lot of people had them coming out on top of the West when you look at how the West was situated. Especially with those young guys that they have coming off the bench,
right?
Okay. Jordan Poole, it was a pretty good chemistry as well. And then you bring along one of the great shooters of Klay Thompson back from a horrific injury, and how long he's been out. You know, I just feel like the chemistry. It started off a little rocky, as it should. Okay. But you know, right. When it was crunch time hit, and they came and showed up, and they pretty much told everyone that we're still here. We're not going anywhere.
True. I can't argue with that. And I'm pretty much matching your opinion on that. I went with better performance by the Warriors. Why? I think the Warriors played Warriors basketball. You know their style of play. Yes. They share their ball. You know, any player can lead them in scoring. We saw moments where Klay Thompson exploded for 32 points in game 5. I mean, their bench was consistent. You know, let's not forget about the way that they came back against the Mavs in game 4, you know, after being down almost 30 points. I mean, that was amazing. I mean, and they cut it down. I think they cut it down to like 8 within the last 4 minutes. I mean, that was crazy, man. So I actually think, you know, and I wouldn't even say, I'm going better performance by the Warriors, but I wouldn't even say worse performance by the Mavs, actually.
At all.
I think the Mavs, in my opinion, were a completely new identity, a completely new team this year that we've never seen in the past years underneath Rick Carlisle. So I give a lot of credit to Jason Kidd on his first year with what he was able to do with that team. I felt like it was more, I felt like them as well. I feel like they really shared the ball well. I love the acquisition of Spencer Dinwiddie right before the trade deadline. I thought that that was a completely new Mavs team. And let's face it, you know, not even just going by the eyeball test, let's look at the record. They went through the Jazz. And they went to the Phoenix Suns, and they took the Phoenix Suns 7 games. I didn't get a chance to see game 7 because I was at a wedding that day. But I heard that at one point they were up by, I think, 25 points in like the second quarter or the third quarter. I didn't get a chance to see the whole thing. But I'm just saying, again, I think that even speaks to about, you know, what this Mavs team has been this year, you know, what they were able to do. So I give a lot of credit. You know, I don't even, like I said, I can't really say that it was a worse performance by the Mavs. I just think, you know, the Warriors just have a little bit more firepower than them. And then obviously experience is experience, man. You can never underestimate that. So I give a lot of credit to them. So moving on over to the Eastern Conference, same kind of question. Was it a better performance by the Celtics or a worse performance by the Heat? Which way are you going on this one?
I'm honestly going to go with a worse performance by the Heat. I honestly say that because when you look at the Heat and you look at them on paper, it just didn't seem like the Heat on paper. I mean, it really looked at it as the Celtics versus Jimmy Butler. Yes, granted, Tyler Herro got injured, you know, but you know, when you have Jimmy with the leadership that he has, and then you follow that up with Bam Adebayo, who, you know, he's not, I'm not going to say he's, you know, the top big man, you know, in the NBA or anything, but he has a good stat line.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I felt like that wasn't what we expected of him. Now, he's never been the person of, you know, just chucking up shots, you know, 20 shots, 20 attempts and stuff like that. But I just felt like the bench and everyone surrounding Jimmy didn't really step up as much as everyone expected them to.
Right.
But you do have to give credit to the Celtics because of their defense and what they're known for, especially this season and the second half of the season. So I'm not going to, you know, knock them 100%. But, you know, from what we've seen, what we've witnessed, I feel like that, you know, if I had to pick, it would have been a worst performance by the Heat.
Okay. Can't argue with you on that. So for me personally, I struggled a lot with this one. And the reason why I struggled is because I felt it could be better performance by the Celtics and the Heat, and it could also be worse performance by the Celtics and the Heat. So I really don't have a definitive, you know, one way for the one team and one way for the other. I think both teams have moments where they shine and moments where they just look horrible.
Right.
You know, I think we obviously know the Heat, they were beaten up by injuries. You know, Jimmy Butler wasn't healthy, Tyler Herro, Kyle Lowry. All these guys were banged up. You know, at points they shine. You know, we saw Jimmy Butler. He had two huge games at the end of the series. You know, I think Bam Adebayo, I agree with you. I think he's got to be better. You know, and it's not to come down on him. I think the guy is talented.
Yeah.
You know, but I just believe, you know what, as I watch Bam play, I'll put it to you this way. I would like to be able to see Bam find another way to impact the game. I feel like it's at points, you know, he can kind of go flat from a scoring standpoint. And we don't really see as much production. And I feel like at those points, it's almost like he's almost non-existent. And game six, where Jimmy Butler put up 47 points, Bam Adebayo, I got the stat line before we got together here today. 6 points, 9 rebounds, and 2 assists. You can't do that as a core piece, you know, for a team who's trying to win a championship. I'm sorry, that's not winning games, you know. And I just think, you know, again, the guy's talented. There's points, you know, where I see him sometimes, he's dribbling the ball, and I feel like I'm always trying to figure out, yeah, like where are you going? Or it almost seems like aimless dribbling is what I'm trying to say. It's not like he's going to create a play for somebody else. It's not like he's going to the basket. It's just aimless dribbling. And I'm just like, you got to find a way to make yourself more of a viable option for your team, you know, in order for you, if you guys are going to be able to go somewhere. So, you know, I love Bam. Like I said, I just think he's got to find a way to continue to grow his game. You know, and to follow it up, you know, I will say he had 25 points in game seven. I just need a little bit more consistency.
Yep.
A little bit more.
You know, Not to mention, Jimmy was injured.
That's true.
You know, when you see him putting his team on the back and then you follow it up with that injury, it's like, okay, next man up.
Right.
I got to do it. I got to, you know, whether you're waiting for Jimmy to snap out of that, well, that, you know, it's too late for that. So, you know, you got to have that motive of just turning it on. And I just feel like it wasn't turned on for me.
Right. No, I agree with you there. I totally agree with you on that. You know, I thought the Heat defense as well, they could be better at points, you know, in this.
Yeah.
I mean, like I was watching the, I think it was game seven. Yes. The first half in game seven, like the lane was wide open and the Celtics literally got every shot they wanted at the basket. It was one play, I think, where Jason Tatum was at the top of the key. The Heat were in a zone. He dumped it over the middle to Marcus Smart, and Marcus Smart had a wide open layup at the basket. I mean, the guys, you know, they attempted to help defense and get to him, but they couldn't get to him. And he had a lot of, I mean, like those kinds of things, man. I'm just like, you know, that kind of stuff can happen.
Right.
It can happen. So, you know, definitely defense has got to be better. I would even say here, I think the Celtics, you know, they shined as well, but they were streaky. You know, the way they lost game six and allowing Jimmy Butler to close out that game the way he did was, I mean, you can't have that happen.
You
can't have that happen. And especially now, if you're going to go up against the Golden State Warriors team, a team like the Warriors, they'll capitalize on it and continue to run away with it. And you'll never be able to find your way back into it. So,
exactly.
Celtics, you know, like I said, I think even when I look at the way they lose that game in game six, you just see the lack of championship hardware, you know, the lack of championship experience, you know, within that team as well. Because again, good teams, I heard Kenny Smith say it earlier this year during the playoffs, and I give a lot of credit. He said, learning how to close out games, it truly is a talent. And I agree with that.
Yes.
I agree with that. And not many people understand that. Games are won, you know, within those last 3 to 4 minutes of a game. Can you effectively put a team away? That's very vital. You know, and even now, like I said, going up against a team like Golden State Warriors. So we'll see. We'll see. Finals are right around the corner. They will be starting this time tomorrow night.
Yes, sir.
Eastern. Moving on with what else is on my mind today. So keeping with the Warriors. Power forward for the Warriors, Draymond Green, we know, who's been doing an excellent job now, who has his opportunity with Turner Sports. He's got his own podcast, the Draymond Green Show. So there were some recent comments. I didn't hear this on his podcast, but I heard this as a segment from Fox Sports Radio from the Odd Couple between Chris Broussard and his partner. I can't remember his partner's first name at the moment. Excuse me. But I wanted to share the quote. I thought it was pretty good. So the quote says, none of these people really moved us from this space. This is Draymond Green talking. Space meaning the championship space for my listeners. He says, Toronto beat us, but no one really came out and said, all right, well, the Golden State Warriors time is up. We didn't leave this space because we were too old to do it. We didn't leave this space because all of us went our separate ways. We left this space because Klay Thompson was out, and then he was out again. Andre was out. Steph got hurt. Andre wasn't here. Steph got hurt. We didn't leave this space because we were not capable of being in this space anymore. So a very loaded quote here, to say the least. Josh, what are your thoughts on what Draymond has to say here? Where are you at on this?
I completely agree, 100%. I mean, he stated two main factors of the Golden State Warriors within the last 8 years in Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. And both of them having severe injuries that took a toll for them.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people counted them out because of the change of the roster. Right. And you look at the bench and how young that bench is. You look at the draft picks that they have, and you look at James Wiseman that they still have that hasn't played a lot of basketball for them. And it's like, okay, well, you know, not to mention you got Phoenix that has the pretty much the same team that they've had over the last two, three years.
Yeah.
You know, you got a lot of teams that kind of stepped up in terms of their rosters and build a good chemistry. But like you said, they're still the Warriors. I don't think age affected them at all. You know, you have a team that you start off with, and you think that because of how many times they went to the finals, you know, they're going to keep going and keep going. But when you have those key players that aren't able to contribute because of an injury, well, yeah, you're going to take a little back step, but it's not a significant step. Yeah. So I completely agree with them. I don't see no response in the opposite direction from him.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on this one too. I think I even heard some people say, "Well, man, is he being prideful?" No, I wouldn't call him prideful. I think, you know, there's a lot of validity to his statement, and I think like anything else, action speaks louder than words. The last time the NBA Finals was 2019. All right, that was 3 years ago. 2 years went by. Like you said, he talked about the injuries that they went through. The team was healthy this year for the most part. I mean, Steph Curry got hurt in April, but he was able to bounce back. And let's face it, they're in the NBA Finals again.
Yep.
You know, and you could talk about, oh, well, LA is not there and things of that nature. Again, with the competition that was in front of them, and I still think it was tough. Denver was not an easy blow-by for them.
Exactly. Now,
I think if Jamal Murray was there, it certainly would have made it more interesting. But I'm saying Jokic is a lot to handle. You know, with what the team had. It's just the fact they didn't have all their guns. Obviously, Michael Porter Jr. wasn't there as well. You know, even Memphis. I think Memphis gave them a good run for their money.
Yes.
I think, you know, there's a lot of validity to what he says. And I think like anything else, just when you've been there before, like you said, the core is the same in terms of, you know, Draymond, Klay, Iguodala, Steph, the core of the team was the same. So I think, you know, these are the things that make the difference within a team's longevity that people really have to dive into. So I don't see anything wrong with his comments. You know, I think they're 100% correct, you know.
Not to mention, I don't mean to cut you off, but we have to give a lot of credit to Steve Kerr, because the fact of him having to go through those drastic changes and trying to find out who's going to fill the shoes of Steph and Klay while they're out, and to look at a guy named like Jordan Poole, who just, if I'm not mistaken, last year he was in the G League.
Right.
Or maybe it was the year before. I'm not 100% sure on it. But just within the last couple of years, nobody was looking at Jordan Poole the way that he was playing, not to mention for the Golden State Warriors alongside of Steph and Klay Thompson. So I completely I give a lot of credit to Steve and just kind of keeping his poise and understanding that their time will still come, is still there. They're just taking a little back row for the time being.
Yeah, no, I agree. Man, I would even add that I think coaching is a talent as well, especially
that's
so talented. You know, we have multiple guys that essentially could be superstars, that essentially could be, you know, cornerstone pieces for a franchise. To have multiple of those people on the same team, you know, and getting them to buy into, you know, one goal, you know, this idea of team and working together, you know, having a leader like Steph Curry, who's so humble and you know, can take a backseat. We talk about all those great years with Kevin
Durant.
You know, essentially people say, well, did Steph Curry fall off? It wasn't really so much that he fell off. He just recognized the greatness of a guy like Kevin Durant standing at a 6'10 frame and just, hey, man, you got this. Go.
And he did it in the playoffs in terms of coming off, starting off on the bench. And it worked for them. So
Exactly. You know, and again, there's not many people that are cut like that in terms of, when I say cut like that, in terms of just being able to essentially be less in a time, you know, for the sake of the team, you know.
Open-minded.
Yeah. You know, we saw some of the great years of the Spurs, you know, with Greg Popovich, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker. Manu Ginobili was just as good as some of those other guys, but was able to take that six-man spot coming off the bench, understanding that what? Multiple people can't be on the floor at the same time handling the ball. It was Tony, it was Manu, you know, and Manu, he thrived in that six-man. Yep. So, you know, again, it takes a specific kind of player to, you know, accomplish, you know, greatness, you know, and it takes guys being able to buy into a system. So that's funny. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. That's one of my answers for an upcoming portion here, but let's just keep going. Part three here, what's on my mind. So keeping here on the topic of the finals we got coming up. Okay. What is it going to take for two-part question. What will it take for the Warriors to overcome the Celtics? Or what will it take for the Celtics to overcome the Warriors? So going with the first part of that question first, what will it take for the Warriors to overcome the Celtics, Josh?
Honestly, I feel like you have to try and contain, surprisingly, I think you have to try to contain Al Horford in the middle.
Okay.
Because he showed me in the playoffs that, you know, he kind of revised his career with coming back to Boston, and he's played a huge role in terms of just with rebounding, with putting up shots, with just off-ball screens. I've seen it all throughout the playoffs through him. Obviously, you gotta try and contain Tatum and or Jason Jaylen Brown. And I mean, honestly, I think you gotta play Warriors basketball as we know it. You know, it's not a one man. It doesn't have to be a one man team. It doesn't have to be a Steph shooting, hitting 35 points, 40 points.
Right.
You know, you got a team, and you have a lot of firepower, especially Andrew Wiggins, who's another person that revised his career with the Warriors. And you know, I know it's the Mavericks compared to the Celtics, but I look at an NBA team at like any other NBA team. You know, they're professionals. They do what they're able to do, what they can do, what they know what they are able to do on the court. And being that the Celtics are the defensive team that we all know, I just feel like you have to capitalize when it's needed.
Right. No, I agree with you. I think you hit on some of the things that I had mentioned. So let me tell you what I got. I say, so again, first part of the question, guys, here is, what is it going to take for the Warriors to overcome the Celtics? So for Golden State, I'd say I expect excellency from the core of Thompson, Steph, Draymond, Looney, and Iguodala if he plays. Why? Because I'm banking on the fact that these are guys that have been there. All right. Mm-hmm. They've been there before. They know what it takes to win a championship. So I expect these guys to be excellent. And that doesn't mean necessarily, like you said, putting up 25 and 35 points every single night. But I expect, you know, I expect these guys to be great because that's who they are and they're champions. So I expect them to be like champions. Outside of that, I think it's going to take guys like Wiggins.
Yep.
Jordan Poole. Jonathan Kuminga. Moses Moody, Damian Lee, maybe one of these guys, or even Gary Payton Jr., the second, if he plays as well, if he's healthy. It's going to take something from those guys as well. It's going to take, and I'll say at least two or three of those guys have got to be on their A game, all right?
Yeah.
If I'm the Warriors, I would expect that Boston is going to, I would just be prepared. and expect that Boston is going to swarm guys like Curry and Thompson, and essentially trying to make it a defensive hell, you know, against that Warriors offense. I expect them to go ahead and do what they got to do. So in that case, like I said, one of these guys that I just mentioned, Moody, Kuminga, Poole, Wiggins, well, these two or three of those guys have got to be on their A game if the Warriors are going to be successful in this series. So I know Draymond Green's going to do his thing. Draymond Green is kind of like that wild card. You know, I got to say something about Draymond. You know, it's so funny. So we know that Draymond is kind of looked at as like the facilitator for this Warriors team, obviously. You know, his ability to defend, his ability to go out there and create, you know, he's putting guys in their positions, you know, being able just to see the floor and see the offense. You know, we know about the level of dexterity for the Warriors and their ability to just to be able to shoot. We talk about Steph Curry. We talk about Klay Thompson. We talk about Jordan Poole. We know these guys can pretty much shoot it from anywhere. Even Andrew Wiggins shot really well in the former series from three. You know, we know who Steph Curry is. When he shoots a three, it's going to happen. But I don't know, for me, it's like sometimes when I see Draymond Green shoot a three, you know what it's like?
I knew you were going there.
you know what it's like when I see Draymond Green shoot a three? It's almost like, you ever cut your arm before? And you ever have somebody come and maybe like, if they want to sanitize it, they put the alcohol on there for you. And then when they put it, like stings a little bit, and it's like, like, I feel like when Draymond Green shoots, it just hurts.
It's a cringe.
It just hurts. I mean, like I said, you know what you're going to get from Steph. You know what you're going to get from Clay, and you expect that. But it's something about when Draymond Green shoots that three, especially if you hate the Warriors, you can't tell like you shoot that thing, and it just don't make you, like you say, it makes you cringe. It makes you cringe, man. So I get a kick out of him, man. I can really do.
I get that.
He's great for the sport, man. So moving on, second half of the question, what will it take for the Celtics to overcome the Warriors? Where you at on that?
Well, you said it right there. You just got to know that you're playing against, you know, the two greatest shooters in the league. So obviously, you know, putting a lot of focus on them, whether it's switching, you know, fighting through screens, just kind of making it really difficult for them to shoot. I also think that Marcus Smart really has to play a big role in here, whether it's on a defensive end or offensive end, because everyone knows that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are the two main guys that they're really going to be focused on. And that's going to leave Marcus Smart. That's going to leave, like I mentioned before, Al Horford, even Robert Williams, with his energetic style of play and the defense that he brings, you know, as long as him and Al Horford can stay out of foul trouble, I really can see the Celtics at least taking this series to game seven. But it's just like how you said with the Warriors, and the Celtics bench has to show up. So we're looking at guys like
Peyton Pritchard.
We're looking at guys like him to come off the bench and still have that spark, you know, or helping out the starters. You know, it's going to be a tough series for them, but it's not an impossible series that they can't overcome.
Right. No, I agree with that. I agree. I think, so for me, that's where I went with it. I said, you know, I believe it's going to take lockdown defense every single night from the Celtics. All right, that's number one, especially when you think about the powerhouse that the Warriors offense is. The Celtics defense has got to be immaculate. All right. I'll say almost, if not near perfection, from Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. These guys have got to be ballistic. They've got to be out of this world, and offensively and defensively. And it's not even so much that I want to put unnecessary pressure on them. I know it's their first finals. I get all that. But the reason why I say that is I question a little bit of the Celtics supporting cast. I don't know how much more offense we can depend on guys like who? Derek White, Grant Williams. I don't know how much Grant Williams, I don't know how much offense they're going to be able to provide, you know, in terms of scoring and things of that nature to keep up with a powerhouse kind of offense that we think about what the Warriors are. You know, so that's why I say offensively, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, like I said, they got to be ridiculous. They got to be on a whole nother level we've never seen before, which is a lot. It's a lot to ask for. Like I said, first NBA Finals, you know, so we'll see if they can keep up to it. I believe the Celtics starters as well, you know, the rest of the guys are going to have to help carry the load. You mentioned Robert Williams. We talked about Marcus Smart. You know, these guys as well are going to have to find their way to contribute. And I expect that they will. You know, so I'll definitely, you know, I think that's the way I'm going to go with it. Like I said, I expect JT and JB to be out of this world, and the rest of the guys, you know, where they can, you got to try to get your scoring in.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at on that one. Last piece here I wanted to touch on in terms of what's on my mind. So the Lakers, okay. Los Angeles Lakers, recently hired Darvin Ham, who was the former assistant coach for the Milwaukee Bucks, as their head coach for the upcoming season. Josh, what is it going to take for the Lakers to get back into playoff contention? And I say playoff contention because originally in my mind, I was thinking, what's it going to take for them to get back to the finals? Well, let's face it, they didn't even get to the playoffs this year. So let's start with the playoffs first. What is it going to take for the Lakers, the Los Angeles Lakers, y'all, to get back to playoff contention? Go ahead.
Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot. It's a lot.
I like the pickup in Darvin Ham, especially with him being with Milwaukee for a couple of seasons and just kind of being under the head coach and kind of, I'm pretty sure, taking notes and whatnot of that.
Right.
I don't think that it's just the change in coaching that, you know, is going to get them back to the playoff contention. Don't get me wrong. We're talking about some of the greatest players that we've seen in the NBA on one team. However, you know, age does come into play. Now, other than LeBron James, who is still doing things that we've seen him do in 2003 when he first came to Cleveland, you know, you got to worry about Anthony Davis. How much can he do? And how much of the season is he going to be healthy in?
Right.
That's a big factor with it. So when you take off Anthony Davis, it's like, okay, well, who do you have to fill his shoes? Dwight Howard? That's not going to happen.
Right.
So now you look over, you got Russell Westbrook. Well, Russell Westbrook, just like how everyone else is talking about James Harden, he's not the Russell Westbrook that we know of in OKC. So, you know, it's going to take, I think, a couple of trades here and there, maybe some good draft picks. But, you know, you still got LeBron, you still got the King. It's just a matter of how is he going to come back in terms of, you know, we know how much money he does put into his body and you know, just making sure that he is physically able to still do this game that he loves. But, you know, it's not just Bron. It's not just AD. It's a supporting cast. It's people that knows how to handle their roles and be okay with it. And, you know, let's be honest, you can't really expect them to do that in the first 10 to 15 games. And I feel like that's a lot of people that, you know, that try to put that pressure on them in the beginning of the season.
Right, right. So I agree with everything you said. I think everything's correct. I'm just going to take it a level deeper, all right? So what is it going to take for them to get back into playoff contention? I'm going to start with order and organization, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Before we even get to the basketball floor, all right, let's go back a little bit. So Frank Vogel was let go at the beginning of April, right after the season ended. Right after he came out, there were more reports coming out in regards to the lack of agreement and structure with the organization. There were multiple reports about in terms of, you know, I'm sorry, there were reports that there were multiple people that were making the decisions in terms of the roster construction that was put together for this current season. Is it LeBron? Is it Rob Pelinka? Is it us? We don't know who it was, all right? There was multiple voices, multiple people that were mentioned in terms of that. And I got to be honest, there's actually a part of me who thinks back to when Magic Johnson left this organization about 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was 2018, 2019, right around there, I think. You know, and just some of the comments and the reasoning behind why he left and some of the things that he shared on television. I think Stephen A. had him on First Take. And he was very, you know, open just in terms of, you know, the things that he was not necessarily in agreement with. I think back to some of that, you know, and I think right about now, a lot of what he was saying looks valid. A lot of it, you know, and I say, look, you know, I'm reminded, for me personally, I'm reminded of a saying that I used to be really fond of from a favorite scholar or minister of mine. He actually passed away. His name was Miles Monroe. And he always used to say, whatever you fail to manage, you will lose. Okay. Whatever you fail to manage, you will lose. And I think if the Lakers are going to make progress at all this season, it's going to have to start with order within their internal organization. Because I really think what happened to them this year is the lack of management that was going on internally within the offices just slowly started to manifest itself within the players and the organization and what we physically saw on the floor. That's my personal opinion. That's my personal opinion. You know, and I'm a little bit concerned for Darvin Ham because I really hope that they took this offseason to really, you know, get themselves in alignment to make sure that they can put forth a better presentation this year. Darvin Ham, we know he's a first-year coach. You know, and you just want to make sure you're putting guys in a position to put their best foot forward. So that's really what I'm looking at, man. I think it's got to start with an organization. I'm excited for him. You know, I wish him nothing but the best. Like you said, I think very real questions. We got to look at Anthony Davis' health. You know, I heard people even say in this ear, should we consider Lakers, you know, consider trading him? And it sounds crazy to even say that when you think about the way and the light that we held Anthony Davis in, you know, for so many years in the past during his years in the Pelicans. But the reality of it is, you know, the brother really struggles in terms of being able to stay healthy. And that's a very serious question when you're asking teams to invest dollars in you, millions of dollars, you know, for a longer period of time. And he's quote unquote in his prime right now. He's only about 28, almost 29 years old. So, I mean, you know, real questions, real things that you're dealing with there. So I would say my number two thing on that is just roster adjustments, which is what you just touched on. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. But number one, you got to start with the order and the organization.
I was real quick. You touched on it in terms of, you know, just bringing Darvin Ham in. And I feel like he has so much pressure on him. I feel like any coach, I mean, at one point there were talks about trying to bring Mark Jackson in. And and honestly, me personally, I didn't like that. I didn't want him to, because I felt like after what happened with him years ago with the Warriors and how he was let go, and to bring him into a roster and an organization that just doesn't look like the organization that we all know right now, I feel like it would have been a lot more pressure. And if it didn't work out for him, then it would have just been a lot more things to put into his name, you know, as far as his coaching ability. And I feel like I'm hoping and I'm praying for Darvin Ham, and I hope that, you know, the outcome for him is positive. But I will definitely be, I won't be surprised if a lot of people try to come down on him if it doesn't go the way that everyone is thinking that it should go.
Right. No, I agree. I agree with you. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Yes.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that, man. I think the other part of it is just remembering this is the number two, the number three largest media capital within the United States of America. So I think that's the other thing too is, you know, when you play for a team like the Lakers in the Los Angeles, in the city of Los Angeles, you know, there's expectations that come with that. And if you think of mine, we can listen to some of the greats, you know, the James Worthy's, Magic Johnson's, Shaq's, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's, even Kobe when he was still living, they'll tell you the same thing. There's expectations that come when you to put on the purple and gold. So, you know, same thing with the media coverage. It's tough. It is tough, you know, but I'm wishing them nothing but the best.
It's time. Of course.
All right, we're into our next segment here, guys, for Crunch Time. So we're going to do something a little bit different. Since I was away, as I mentioned to you before, it was wedding season coming into the month of May for me. I didn't really get a chance to rehash my thoughts over some of the first round matches, some of the second round matches. So what I have here is I have all the matches here. Me and Josh are going to give you guys just quick takes on what we thought of each one of these series. So, Josh, I'm going right down the line, starting with the Eastern side between round one of the Heat and the Hawks. What were your thoughts on that series, Josh?
I felt like, Trey needs some help. You know, Trey needs another star player. You know, when the shooting isn't hitting, you know, you kind of see that it just fell apart, and the whole team fell apart because he couldn't do anything. So I honestly think that they need to look into another star being down in the ATL for that.
Right. I agree with you on that. I think the Hawks really got beat up this year in terms of just injuries, not having their full roster. We know John Collins was out pretty much. I think he did play like a game or two. I don't think he played the whole time. But, I mean, he came into the playoffs being hurt. I think that them just not having a roster. Don't forget what COVID did back to the Hawks back in
December.
I mean, pretty much all the teams in the NBA. So I just think the Hawks, you know, were really at a disadvantage coming into the playoffs and didn't have enough to take down the Heat. Sticking in the East, Philadelphia 76ers and the Raptors. Josh, what were your thoughts on that series?
I liked what I seen from Philadelphia. I just didn't like, obviously, what we all know with JoJo still being in that one game that kind of changed the next series for them. But, you know, from James Harden being in there, I actually like, you know, I like the outcome just because of everything that James Harden and JoJo and the Sixers have been through within the last second half of the season. So I expect them to be back and be better.
Okay. I think for me, I thought it was a great series. I think the Raptors, they just don't have enough. You know, I think that's
what
it came down to. I think the guys played hard. They have a wonderful roster. They literally got like five guys that are all between the heights of like 6'7".
6'9", something like that.
Between Jay, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Scottie Barnes. It's just length on length on length.
Yeah.
On. So, another great series. Again, I just think the Raptors didn't have enough. And Philly was able to close things out, I think, in six games. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the next series, Milwaukee Bucks and the Chicago Bulls. Josh, what did you think about that series, man?
I never had faith in the Chicago Bulls, even when they went into that run in the season. You know, on paper, they're another team that on paper, they look amazing. But even on paper, when you look at the bench and whatnot, I just felt like they weren't going to – they didn't have enough to get through it, especially with the freak of Giannis and just the length of Brooke Lopez and Middleton. So I knew from the rip that's how it was going to be.
Right. No, I agree with you on that. I think Chicago, they got off to a really good start in the beginning of the season, but I agree with you. Ultimately, their supporting cast was not enough. And obviously, it didn't help that they didn't have – I think Lonzo Ball was out for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
I think they were also missing Kobe White. I don't know if Kobe White played.
I think Caruso got injured.
I know Caruso was in and out, right.
Yeah.
You know, but same thing. I just think Chicago, they didn't have enough. Milwaukee Bucks, obviously being the, excuse me, the reigning, champion from the season prior. I think it was just too much to deal with on that end. So next series, Josh, between the Boston Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets. Now, this was a blockbuster.
Obviously, it wasn't what we all expected to be. We kind of maybe expected this to go seven games, but for KD to get shut out, it was a lot. It was a lot of questions for the Nets. So, at the same time, kudos to how the Celtics played and the defense that they played. You know, they held their own. In Kyrie Irving and KD, but you know, KD and the Nets got some explaining and some talking to do in the offseason, definitely.
Oh yeah, no, I agree with you. I think I got to give a lot of credit to the Boston Celtics defense. We know the prolific scorers and players that KD and Kyrie Irving are, and to limit those guys and to beat them four times in a row is very tough. And I think a lot of people don't understand. It's very tough to sweep a team. It's not easy.
Yes.
It's not easy. And again, on top of that, when you talk about two great Hall of Famers in KD and Kyrie Irving, it's even tougher. I give a lot of credit to Boston Celtics. I mean, they essentially were able to limit these two players for three out of the four games. Kyrie ripped open the game one, had about a 40-point performance, and obviously KD had a great performance in game four, but it just was not enough in order to win. Team, as I predicted, I thought the Nets would run into some chemistry issues, and they did. Ultimately, it just wasn't enough. And I just think all the nonsense, don't forget, they still got to deal with Ben Simmons when they get
Simmons,
September. Lord have mercy. I'm going to get started. Anyway, Phoenix Suns and the New Orleans Pelicans, Josh, what were your thoughts on this series?
I actually love that series. That was one of my top series that I've enjoyed in the playoffs, just because of the Pelicans and how young of a team that they are, and the power that they had behind Willie Green, the passion that he showed. Being that he was just with the Suns as well, they showed me great fight, and Brandon Ingram really turned it on, because for a lot of the season you didn't really hear his name come up when it came to the scorers and the stars. So I loved it. I loved it on both ends, being Chris Paul and what he brings with Phoenix Suns. But Pelicans really showed me something, and not to mention they still have to figure out what they're going to do with Zion Williamson.
Right. No, I agree with you. I think I give a lot of credit to New Orleans as well. I thought they put up an excellent fight. I didn't even expect them to make it out of the play-in. So I give them a lot of credit for that one. I think they played well. The CJ McCollum addition looked absolutely next to Brandon Ingram. It was nice that Brandon Ingram came back as well, so we could kind of see what that would look like. It just kind of gets you salivating for next season. We'll see what happens with Zion. We're now hearing reports that Zion has now been cleared for full action. Is he going to stay? Is he going to be extended? Does he want to be traded? We'll have to see. Can he get his weight down? Is he going to stay healthy? There's a lot of questions. You know, the New Orleans as well is looking at. I think obviously same situation here as the Bucks and Bulls series. I just think Phoenix was too much in terms of what their current roster and just coming off of where they were the season prior. Next series, I'll say Dallas Mavericks and the Utah Jazz. Josh, what were your thoughts on this one?
Honestly, I have no faith in the Utah Jazz unless they start trading some people away, making some changes, because I've been seeing this for the last, five, six seasons, maybe longer than that.
Yeah.
Between them and the Clippers, they just seem like the same team that runs into the same scenario with the same stoppage. And you got to ask the question of how much longer does Donovan Mitchell have in terms of being wanting to be with the Utah Jazz, not to mention Rudy Gobert and that whole little chemistry that's what's quote unquote iffy by everyone that's saying. But on the other hand, you got Luka and showing, you know, that Luka magic and that, you know, he's in the NBA and he's there, he's here to stay. So kudos to the Mavs and what they pulled off against the Jazz. But I've never had any faith in the Jazz to begin with.
I agree with you. I think Utah relatively has been the same team for the last, you know, 4 to 5 seasons. I mean, they just they play well, they disappoint. They play well, they disappoint.
Yep.
Well, they disappoint. It's the same thing over and over again. We talked about Dallas a little bit earlier. I think Dallas, like I said, looks like a completely new revamped team. Really interested to see what they look like going forward. You know, it'll definitely be exciting. Now, I was kind of surprised when they moved Porzingis during the season, but it seems like the parts that they were able to bring in, you know, Davis Bertans, Spencer Dinwiddie, just some of these guys, like I said, that were huge. And Jalen Brunson was amazing.
Yes.
Really interested to see what happens with him. I believe he's a free agent this summer, so hopefully they can offer him whatever it is that he's looking for. I mean, he's a great addition to have, you know, at Luka's side. I would try to do everything I can to keep him as well.
Yeah.
Moving on here, the Golden State Warriors in Denver in the first series, in the first round. What were your thoughts on that one, Josh?
I mean, Golden State and Denver, they always put on a good series or a good game. Jokic being Jokic, putting up the Jokic numbers. I feel like, you know, with the absence of Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., you kind of seen that in this season or in this series. And, you know, putting a lot of the weight on Joker to handle the ball, distribute the ball and score, it just kind of caught up to them. And I felt like, you know, after a while, you could see the rhythm, you could see the energy from Joker kind of deflating just from all of what he had to take on it. Now, and like I said earlier, kudos to the Warriors being how they are, being what they went through and the bench that they have. You know, I really do give a lot of credit to Steve Kerr. I'm going to keep saying that because I feel like he doesn't get a lot. So it was a good series overall, though.
I think so, too. Great series. I think Denver pretty much gave it all they could, considering the guys that they had on the floor. I just think, you know, again, you're going up against a great team in the Warriors, and it's tough. It's tough. It's not easy to beat, you know, teams that have, like I said, been to the championship, you know, and that are loaded. So, and especially when the Warriors go on like that, you already know it's a talent, you know, it really is tough to stop. The next round here, the Memphis Grizzlies and the Minnesota Timberwolves. What were your thoughts on that one, Josh?
That was another one that was my top series, just because of the battle with Patrick Beverley and Ja Morant. We all know how Patrick Beverley plays defense, but we also know the dog that Ja Morant has in him. And then you bring on, you bring in Dylan Brooks, who was struggling, but you got D'Angelo Russell on the other hand. You got Cat that came in, Karl-Anthony Towns that came in, tried to do his part. But this series overall, I really enjoyed that. I mean, it's two young teams with a couple of people that, you know, in veterans of Patrick Beverley and whatnot. I loved it. It was energetic. It kind of reminded me of like just the old school playoffs in like 2000, early 2000s. So I enjoyed it, and I expect John and Grizzlies to be back next year better than ever.
Yeah, I agree. This was definitely an exciting one. I think it also was also a coming out party also for guys like Anthony Edwards, you know, who really
Yes.
Obviously, young piece of talent. He's got, you know, there's a little more ways to go in terms of solidifying his game and just learning how to build that consistency. But I have no doubt he definitely has shown that he's going to be a star in this league. So really excited to see where he's going to go. Cat, I think as well. I think it was a year of growth for him as well. I think Cat at moments had times where he's shiny. He looked great, but I also think that you saw some of just his deficiencies. He had games that wasn't exactly coming up on the scoring and the stat sheet, you know, in ways that he should, considering this is a guy that's a cornerstone piece of your franchise. So I think it was a growth year for him as well. D'Angelo Russell, same thing. I think, you know, he had moments where he shined, sometimes where he didn't. So
yeah,
I like the series. I agree with you. This was really this one was a dogfight, man, from start to finish. So I really enjoyed it. Just moving on here to our conference semifinals. So between the Heat and Philadelphia, Josh, what were your thoughts on that one?
It was hard. It was hurtful to watch. You know, with Joel going down early with the Raptors series, and you know, him playing through the injuries that he had, not to mention the whole concussion that started it off. So you try to look over into James Harden and, you know, you think, oh, well, we can finally see the James Harden that everyone expects to see. And we didn't really see it. However, I did see some light with Tyrese Maxey, as I've seen all season.
Right.
But you got to give credit to the to Miami, man. You got to give credit to Jimmy Butler and how he played and how he stepped up. You got to give credit to Tyler Hero, sixth man of the league. PJ Tucker stepping up on the defensive end, and then you got to give it credit with JoJo with coming back and trying to do everything that he can when people kind of ruled him out for at least pretty much the whole series, being that it was four games at one point. So overall, pretty good series, kind of disappointing, but you know, they'll make some changes for the Sixers in the offseason. Hopefully they can run that back.
Right. No, absolutely. I think this again, so I missed a little bit of the second round, guys, but just in terms of what I was able to glean and whatever I did see from it, I would say my takeaway from that one is a little bit concerned about just James Harden going forward, much like all the other reports we've been hearing, and just his, just kind of where he is within his career, the dollars he's looking for, and what Philadelphia is expecting from him is a little bit concerning. I think James Harden, we know, is not the same player we've seen in Houston, or he hasn't been so far. We'll see what things look like in October when we get to next season. You know, I thought, you know, at moments he shined, at moments he didn't. He had one huge breakout game where I think he scored about 30 plus points.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, wasn't, you know, he wasn't what we needed to be. He wasn't what the team needed him to be in order to be able to get over the hump. And I kind of saw that coming. You know, I give all the credit to Miami Heat. They won. It is what it is. Next series, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics. What were your thoughts on that one, Josh?
I enjoyed this series because once again, you're going up and going up against the defending champions in the Milwaukee Bucks. But I just felt like it was too much for Giannis to handle. You can kind of see it in that final game when he finally sat down on that bench and just kind of a big sigh of disappointment, but a sigh of, could have been a sigh of relief because he put his all into it. You can see it. And then, you know, when you talk about Chris Middleton and what he brings to the team, you know, you can see that, you've seen that in the series. You know, everyone kind of looked at Jrue Holiday to be that second piece, and while he did help out and he did do his part, you know, he didn't get enough in Bobby Portis and Brooke Lopez and whatnot. So, like I said earlier, granted, you got to give credit to the Boston Celtics. They've been just that defensive team ever since the second half of the season. I don't know where the click came, but it did. The switch was turned on, and they handled business. So, another great series that I was happy for.
Yeah, I agree. I give credit to Boston and the ones that came away with the victory. I think the biggest issue for Milwaukee was just not having Chris Middleton. And I think, you know, they needed another elite wing player in order for them to overcome that Boston team. I think if Chris Middleton was there, I actually still give the edge to Milwaukee. I expected Milwaukee to get by and make their way back into the Eastern Conference Finals if they were healthy. So I think not having him there was a huge miss, you know, and Milwaukee not really being able to get consistent production, you know, from guys like Pat Connaughton, Grayson Allen. You know, these are the guys that essentially were taking those shots or handling, you know, that were essentially in Chris Middleton's position, you know, as a result of him not being there. So I think I hurt him. I really do.
Yeah.
Next series here, Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks. Josh, what were your thoughts on that one, man?
Luka Magic. That's all I got to say. Luka Magic. He was one of those guys that at one point was, you know, in the talks with John Morant and whatnot. And at one point he slowed, kind of dwindled down. And but this playoff series, I mean, for one, it was talks of, is he going to be one of the greats? And there were a lot of people on talk shows that were just like, well, he has to get past the Phoenix Suns in order to be, you know, in the argument. And he did it. And he showed out. His team showed out. The coaching staff did an amazing job. I mean, you know, this is Chris Paul that we're talking about. This is the team that were just in the finals last year with pretty much the same team. And, you know, he took care of business. He handled it really well. So a lot of kudos goes to the Mavericks. I wasn't ashamed of this series.
Yeah, I think also, too, I give credit to Dallas. I think there's a part of it that looks at Phoenix with a little bit of a question mark. And I say that because I wonder, did we get a little bit too excited with just their run that they went on last year and being able to make it to the finals? I think one of the things we have to keep in mind with both the Bucks and the Phoenix Suns, first, which I give them credit because they won. I understand. Right. It wasn't that the thing was unfair, but it wasn't that the playoffs were unfair. But we also have to keep in mind that there were injuries that happened on both the Brooklyn Nets, you know, not having James Harden, not having Kyrie there, or having James Harden at 100%. We know what LeBron and AD looked like in the first round. You know, they were... LeBron had a nasty ankle turn, I think, in April of 2021, coming right into the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, there were some things, there were some dominoes that fell just right in order for these teams to get where they got. Right. And it was also part of me, like I said, that says, man, maybe we're just getting a little bit too excited about Phoenix. But again, to my understanding, like I said, Dallas was unbelievable. I didn't see Game 7, but I heard Game 7 was pretty much, it was ugly in the beginning.
Very ugly.
So, you know, I give them credit. Last series here, Josh, Golden State Warriors and the Memphis Grizzlies. What were your thoughts on that series?
Like I said earlier, talking about Memphis, you're putting the dog in Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies, a young team against a veteran team and a good chemistry team in the Warriors, not to mention coaching with Steve Kerr. And I liked it. I mean, it showed that, you know, Ja's here to stay. The Grizzlies will be back. And I think that this is the start of seeing the Memphis Grizzlies back in the playoffs, but going deep into the playoffs, like how they used to go back in, I would say maybe 06, 07, around those years. But I agree. I like both performances. You know, there were question marks with the Warriors as well, with Klay Thompson kind of trying to come back and playing. Is he going to be the Klay that we all know? And he showed that as well. And, you know, overall, it was a good series.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100% on that. I think Memphis is a young team. They haven't been there before. I thought that they played well. You know, I thought that, you know, there was a gutsy performance on their end. I think, you know, guys went out there and handled their business. They did what they needed to do. It was rocky in the beginning. We had guys setting tones. We got the foul with Draymond Green. We got Dylan Brooks, who was ejected, ended up missing. I think it was game two or game three of that series as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought, you know, it was an overall great series. This is what you want to see in playoff basketball.
Right.
Again, you know, when you've been there before, you talk about playoff experience, you know, these things will definitely play in your favor. So much credit given to the Golden State Warriors.
Of course.
All right, guys. So we are into our line segment. It is the final piece and the final portion of the show. It's actually one of my favorites. And the reason why it's one of my favorites, especially for my new listeners who are out there, that is because on this podcast, we are definitely talking about sports. We're talking about basketball, all the excitement of the NBA Finals, which begin tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't miss it. However, it's important that we continue to win in the game of life. All right. It's very important. So what I want to share here with you guys today, my subtitle for the line segment today is, how do we keep ourselves from being overly concerned with self? It's learning how to be happy for others. That, and this is one of many things. This is just one of them that I'd like to share with you. It's learning how to be happy for other people. And the reason why I chose this is because, as I mentioned to you guys in the beginning of the show, two very good friends of mine, one from high school and another one that I actually met right after high school during my early years in college, just got married. Just got married, and I had an opportunity to attend both of these weddings. One, I was a best man. The other one, I was a groomsman. And I can't tell you just the joy I had being able to watch two people that I love, you know, very dearly to my heart, just being able to cross over and transition into a new season of their lives on a day that's so special, on a day that's so important, you know, where they have the opportunity essentially to tell this person that they have been dating, their boyfriend and their girlfriend, that, hey, listen, I want to spend the rest of my life with you. And for me, I honestly felt honored, you know, to be a part of it and just to be able to see it all come together. And it was just a joy. It was just a happiness that I had, you know, from within. And I got to be honest, that's kind of where I got this title from, is that, you know, sometimes when we're thinking about ourselves, we may not always be thinking about ourselves in the most positive light. And if we're not, you know, these are opportunities for, and again, they're opportunities for us to enter into seasons of depression. There are opportunities for us to feel down. There are opportunities for maybe us to be pessimistic about the future. I mean, you know, there's some negative things that can come out of it if we're not necessarily thinking in an uplifted way, you know, about ourselves. So one of the ways to keep ourselves from that is not allowing ourselves to be so overcome with self, you know? So one of the remedies to that, I felt, is learning how to be happy for other people. You know, another one that I could even say in there is learning how to do things for other people, putting yourself in a position to do something for someone else that benefits you not at all, solely for the other person that you're going to be, you know, gifting or blessing or whatever way or shape or form that is. You know, these are all just, again, pieces of advice or recommendations, nothing that you're forced to do. But that's what I was reminded of as I watched these two people, like I said, transition over into the season of marriage. It's just, I was reminded, learn how to be happy for other people. It really is. It does something for you on the inside. Josh, I don't know if you have anything on this, man. Any moments or anything else that you can add on here to our subtitle here for today in terms of keeping ourselves from being so overly concerned with self?
Well, actually, about a month ago, I was also not in a wedding, but a part of, you know, just being there and seeing one of my best friends as well that I've known for over a decade now. You know, like you said, just step into the other half with that special someone that he's learned to love and whatnot. And just being a part of that and seeing the growth and the happiness that two people can come together and create and handle was just, that was a blessing for me. And, you know, just made me feel good on the inside that, you know, I've seen him through so much. And I'll actually go a different route and saying, you know, we live in a time of depression where it's just high mental, a lot of mental awareness and whatnot is very high. And I put a lot of that on social media, man. I will say that it's been about 4 years since I have had a social media account. And while I do sometimes think that I want to have a social media account and create one, I don't really want it. I'm around a lot of people that go through the comparisons, you know, the people that you follow, whether it's people that just live the luxurious life or people that celebrities and stuff like that. And I've been around so many people that try to compare their life and where they are with themselves to the people that they don't even know. Wow. And a lot of that just, you know, it plays a part and it gets you to wrap your mind in the negative aspects of your life rather than taking a step back and looking at the positive, whether it's, you know, as small as moving out somewhere and being on your own, or, you know, getting into a deeper relationship and or learning about something that you've never done before. Right. A lot of people don't take appreciation within themselves. And it's almost like it has to be noticed by other people in order for them to, you know, kind of consider to be on the happy end. And, you know, just like you said, just kind of taking a step back to admire what you've been, what you accomplished in life, whether it's, you know, on a positive end. I really feel like the social media aspect really does play a big part in that. And I just wish that a lot of people out there would just be on the end of not needing that part.
Right. No, that, and you know what, Josh, that's an excellent point you made too, man. It's funny. I actually was just sharing with another friend of mine recently that I think the thing that we know, but we don't necessarily think about in the moment, is that in social media, you only see whatever it is that that person is permitting you to see about their
yes.
life.
Yes. Nothing from the background.
Yeah. The reason why I can say that is, you know, there's a lot of people who follow me and yep. a lot of people who address me about some of the things that I share, and people know that I like to travel and things of that nature. And it's so funny mm-hmm. how many people think that I have a certain kind of life based off yep. of what it is that they see from my postings and things of that nature. And, you know, again, the things that I'm sharing, yeah, it is part of the picture, but it's not.
Right.
And I right. think people don't necessarily take into consideration that, you know what, I have challenges too. You know, yep. I have, you know, difficulties on my own end as well. It's just the fact that people don't see it because maybe they don't know me personally. There's people yep. who haven't seen me in over 3 years, but they see all my social media posts. And again, they have this idea of what my life is based off of
yep.
what I'm doing. You know, so I think that's, you know, an excellent point that you made there, man. So I love it, man. Like I said, again, guys, these are just recommendations. These are just, you know, opportunities for you to, you know, just try to incorporate some things. You know, it's very important that you continue to take care of your head, take care of your heart. Remember the quote that I shared. If you guys listened to the earlier portion of the show where I talked about the sports, one of my favorite quotes, you know, from one of my favorite scholars or ministers, Miles Monroe, whatever you fail to manage, you will lose. So think about that. Think about the things that are important to you, whatever it is, whether it's your job, whether it's your family, if it's being a good parent, if it is trying to, you know, maybe prepare yourself for your next step, whatever you fail to manage, you will lose. And I say it to myself first, you know, it makes you kind of feel uncomfortable. Well, at least it makes me feel uncomfortable because, again, it makes me think about the areas where I need to work. It makes me think about the areas and the things that are important to me that maybe I probably should put more of my time into. So I can actually be prepared and just, you know, progress in the way that we want to. So don't let this build condemnation. If anything, let it be an opportunity for you to be encouraged. So I hope you guys are able to take something out of this. Josh, again, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on with us today. It's always a pleasure, man. I love, you know, chopping it up with you about hoops, man, and just, you know, everything that you bring to the show is always special. So thank you.
Hey, man, no, thank you, man. Like, the thing that you're doing with this is amazing, man. Just keep it going, man. Don't let anything stop you from coming your way, man. So once again, I appreciate being on here.
It's a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. And again, for all my listeners that are new, please subscribe. We will be back with more content. NBA Finals start tomorrow night. Josh, last question.
Yes, sir.
Who are you picking, man? Who's your finals? What's your finals prediction here?
Oh, well, being the shooter that I am, that I know, and a lot of people know that I am, I got to go with the Splash Brothers and Stephen Clay. So, you know, they've been here before. They seen what everyone said, the doubts and whatnot. I'm going with them. I'll give them six.
Okay. I'm going Warriors, and I got seven games.
Okay.
I expect to keep it interesting. I'm going Warriors, and I got seven games. All my listeners, again, thank you guys for your time. This is 94 Feet, your host, Biodita. I'm out.